This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today I'm with Serena McRae, watercolorist and creator of the card deck Affirmations Moms Actually Need. Welcome, Serena.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Serena, in a nutshell, could you explain what Affirmations Moms Actually Need is and how you came to create it?
Yeah, so I feel like as mothers, we get a lot of expectations thrown at us everywhere from how we're going to parent our kids, but also what having a newborn actually looks like. And we're sold lots of pictures of, you know, adorable sunshiny nurseries and happy parents. And sometimes that doesn't always play out, and we find ourselves lost or confused or completely overwhelmed, which I think is a lot more regular than we realize. So I looked back at myself. I had my first child 7 years ago, and I thought about all the struggles that I had, and if somebody had actually given me advice that would actually have helped me in that moment, what would it be? And I started writing and writing and writing, and I came up with lots of pieces of advice that were real, that focused on taking care of my mental health, taking care of my physical health, that I was as important as my child. And I am now compiling them into a deck of cards. That's the kind of thing that you could stick one in your wallet, put one on your mirror, so that you can have those reminders all the time.
Serena, your artistic journey and your path to motherhood are intertwined in interesting ways, beginning perhaps with your first moment of desire to have a child.
My story is a little bit funny. We decided to have our first baby. We were fairly young, and I paused my education so that I could do that. And then my ultimate plan was to continue my education later. We tried and tried and tried. A year went by, and in that year, it seemed like everybody around me was getting pregnant and I wasn't, and the world was unfair and horrible. And so then I decided it was not the time, obviously, in our life to do that, and we needed a new plan. In my tumultuous emotion, signed up for art school, which was never like the smart thing to do. It was like the fun thing that only weirdos would do. And I had enough emotion in my life that, you know, I made the fun decision to do that. So I signed up for art school, and I did one semester. And it was wonderful. It was the coolest thing that I had ever imagined in my life that I could possibly do. And I was kind of a star of some of the classes. I got a scholarship to continue, and they were going to pay for my next semester from my portfolio. And so things were going really awesome. And then I got pregnant in the last few weeks of my first semester, and which we had basically stopped trying at that point. And so I had gotten this scholarship, and I decided to continue and try it out. And so I went into the second semester, and I spent most of the days in the bathroom at Pima vomiting and not actually in my classes. And then the final day and the last day that I tried to continue, I wrecked my car into a ditch because I had to throw up on my way to school. And I jumped out of the car, was in this little ditch, puked my guts out, and decided that I don't know how this intertwine has happened, but it was time for me to stop trying the school situation.
Fun fact, I saw a fertility doctor as well, and I was told, you know what happens a lot is that the fertility clinic says, try for a year and then make your appointment. And a lot of people try for a year and then they relax because they're like, oh, finally, I'm going to go see the doctor. I'm going to get that help. And they come in for their first appointment and they're actually pregnant by their first appointment. They don't even know it.
That was pretty much exactly what happened with us.
Fast forwarding a little bit, could you describe how you felt after your child was born?
It was entirely not how I expected. I had really horrible pregnancies with both. Never anything life-threatening, but like all of the really inconvenient things that you get in pregnancy, I pretty much had all of them at 99%. So I had this dream that as soon as the pregnancy would be over, all the hard stuff would be over. And then I would just have my baby and everything would be wonderful. And that was 100% not what happened. I pretty much from day two, I had severe depression. I was terrified all the time. I was terrified that my baby would stop breathing. I had moments of rage. I, of course, was exhausted and in pain. All things that people sort of mention, but don't really. Everything looked very different than what I had expected. I remember feeling terrified that my pain medication would run out. My in-laws had been helping me with the baby, and they got a job in California just a couple of weeks after we had the baby. So immediately upon having all these new feelings, being so sore that I could hardly walk across the room, we were then hunting for an apartment. And so our life was kind of thrown up in the air. And then I had this depression that I had no name to. I didn't know what was going on. And I was just thinking, I'm just tired. I'm just overwhelmed with new things, and didn't get any help. And so there was lots of feelings that I just was overwhelmed by and had no idea really what was going on.
You didn't know that you were suffering from postpartum depression.
I did not. I had multiple phone calls from Access Insurance, which I was on at the time, and they did depression screenings. And so they would give me a questionnaire, and I would answer all of the questions, and then they would tell me, you're at high risk for postpartum depression. All right, have a great day. And they would hang up the phone. And there was no resources given to me. There was no follow-ups, no phone calls, calls to my doctor or my pediatrician or anybody. It was just, you're at high risk for this, and have a great day. Bye. And so in my thinking, obviously we'd heard lots about the baby blues, and everybody would talk about the baby blues. And I was thinking in my mind, well, I'm just overwhelmed, and I've just had a massive life change. And they say that I have depression, but obviously I don't, and I'll be fine in a couple of weeks when I've adjusted. And that attitude went on for a very long time. And I continued to get those calls. I think it was like every couple of weeks or so they would call and they would do the screening. And then they would tell me I was at high risk for postpartum depression. And so it was kind of a continued thing for a little while, and nothing really came of it.
And I think often we think that mental health challenges are something that happen to other people. And also in that state, it's difficult to have any type of objectivity about what's going on with us, right? I mean, that's like the very essence of the state itself.
Yes, absolutely. And very much wanting to be strong. So making any justification away from the words mental illness.
What was kind of the first thing that helped you to crawl out of the hole, so to speak, to start to grasp the situation and be able to start to manage it?
I had a couple of experiences that kind of happened at the same time. And those two things were, one, that my depression had gotten so terrible that it started to manifest in physical ways. By that, I mean that I was starving myself because I had major food aversions. I couldn't even think about going into the kitchen. And with that, I was also very much starving my children. They wouldn't get a proper meal until my husband came home. I had gotten gastritis from basically the inside of my stomach just eating itself. And the way that that manifested was that my stomach would bloat up to the point that I looked like I was 9 months pregnant, and it would just hurt. And then it would go back down, and then it would bloat back up. And it was this physical discomfort that actually caused me to seek for help at all. Everything mental and emotional, I thought I can handle that. But as soon as I had a physical symptom, I was like, there's something wrong, and this is something that I need to go get help for. And at that same time, I had a friend who had began selling the brand LuLaRoe. It's a clothing line, and it's very body inclusive. Lots of the clothes are designed to be able to fit every and all body type. And so my friend was very excited about this, and she may have sent me something. Maybe I got a dress from her. And when I put on that dress, because of the way that it was designed and the fabric that was used, it would fit me when I was regular sized, and it would also fit me when I was in those stages of my stomach being bloated up. It got me excited because for the first time, I didn't feel like a cow in somebody else's clothes, and I felt cute. And I started to put on makeup to at least have a smile from the person in the mirror, as opposed to looking like the ghost that I had looked like for a while. And it was really that nudge of that first moment of self-care, of getting something for myself, that made me feel good physically, that really gave me that push to like remember that I'm a human who is deserving of good things.
It's really a beautiful metaphor, that dress that fits no matter what, no matter whether you're having a good day or a bad day. And it kind of speaks to the power of fashion, right? The power of what we put on and how it's designed and whether it's designed for us or not.
Yes, I have a mug that I got around that time that says, "Never underestimate the power of a good outfit on a bad day." And that sort of became my mantra. And that was a big tool that I used to be my first steps in taking care of myself.
Did that push you in the direction of creating these affirmations?
That definitely pushed me into actually thinking about what are the tools that I can use to care for myself. And very much looking back, it was a huge part of my progress out of that pit that I was in. And so many of the affirmations are about remembering that you're an individual who is deserving of nice things, of good self-care, and taking care of yourself and making sure that you still feel like a beautiful human being.
I think sometimes in these conversations, the partners are kind of left out of the conversation. I know that your partner played a role.
Absolutely. He was the only thing that kept everything together. Many days, he was the first meal that the girls would get when he would come home from work. He would feed them. Before that, they would have just been snacking on easy things that I could grab, like Cheerios or whatever. When I had my first daughter, he took several weeks off of work, and they were extremely gracious with him. They didn't really understand what was going on, but he would call in and he would say, "My wife needs me today desperately and I can't come in." And so the first month of my oldest daughter's life, he was really her main caretaker. I was very physically damaged after the birth. I delivered her very, very quickly. And so I had lots of stitches and damage. And so physically, I even had a hard time changing her diaper. And there was lots of things that I physically couldn't do, as well as being in the emotional pits. And so for him, he was really her main caretaker at the beginning. He held everything together. And through the years that followed, that it took me to fight my way out of the depression, he has 100% been the glue and the patriarch that has kept us all functioning and alive.
Some people still frame conversations about maternal leave. It's not maternal leave, it's parental leave. Because really, it's as important, you know, you spoke about it, the employer's understanding that he had a really important role to play. It's not only a mother, it's a family unit, and everybody sometimes needs to be all hands on deck to get through some of those more difficult moments.
Yes, that was absolutely the experience that we had. And looking back and realizing how gracious that they were with my husband constantly calling out of work to take care of me, anybody else would have let him go over that, which is a sad thing to think about in our society. But they did get to the point where they had a little firm word with him and said, "We need you to be here and follow through and not be calling out so much." And, but yeah, I mean, they were very understanding, and having him there was the only thing that kept us doing okay.
Word to the employers out there.
We have a photograph. It's one of our favorite pictures. In the first couple of days after my oldest was born, and it's a photograph of I'm breastfeeding her and my husband is feeding me a sandwich. And I feel like that's like the perfect picture, you know, of how families and husbands are included and partners are included. Even though he's not the one that gave birth to the child, he was 100% part of keeping her alive and keeping the whole family system functioning.
In my case, my husband was one of my breastfeeding coaches. And as counterintuitive as that might sound, like, he was more present when the lactation consultant came to our house. So he was the one who was able to kind of keep me trying over and over again. And without him, I don't know how I would have ever gotten a latch. Previously, we had talked and you had mentioned a little bit about how it felt physically to be in this dark state. Seeing a doctor that was referred to you by your neighbor, I was wondering if you could describe a little bit of the physical and emotional sensations. Of course, everybody experiences depression differently, but I think it's really helpful to hear somebody kind of describe it in a way where maybe some of that resonates with others.
The biggest things that I remember that I can describe is, first of all, looking back, my memories have like a physical dark fog over them. I don't remember them clearly. It's like a film that has been damaged. When I was in the thick of it, I had that fog almost as a dark fog over my eyes that I didn't even see clearly. I would get tunnel vision often, and the world was not clear and it was not bright. It was very dark. There was days that I physically could not lift the covers to get out of bed. I remember looking up the phone numbers to counselors and not physically being able to push the button to make that phone call and use my voice to describe or even ask if anybody could help me. I had massive food aversions. Most foods, it was almost worse than when I was morning sick when I was pregnant. I couldn't go in the kitchen. I couldn't prepare food. I couldn't even think about food. And I can say still that one in particular is something that has kind of stayed with me a little bit. When I have low days, I still have that, like, I can't eat. I can't look at food. And next door, I had befriended my neighbor. She had a young son too. And she referred me to a doctor who was the first person when I was having that gastritis and my stomach was swelling up. It gave me an excuse and I guess a reason to go in and talk to somebody. Whereas before, just thinking about I'm sad didn't feel like a good enough reason to get help. But once I had that physical manifestation, then I thought that I should get help. So she referred me to her doctor. I called and I made an appointment and I went, and there was something very empowering in having been handed that information by somebody who cared. Whereas with the other doctors that I just looked up on the internet, I physically and emotionally couldn't make that phone call. But when I had that referral from somebody who cared about me, then I could. So I went to this doctor and I described to her my big symptoms at the time, you know, the physical discomfort that I was having. Also, I experienced rage, which I think has only begun to come out and be talked about very recently, but I had rage, and it was the most unusual, I feel, of my symptoms, and the most easy to describe, I think. It felt like I had anger in my blood, like it was rage that was flowing through my body that was different than what I had going on in my mind. I sat down with my husband once and tried to describe it to him, and I told him, I'm sorry that I'm acting angry. I don't feel angry. My body feels angry. My body is feeling this rage, and I feel small and scared and out of control. Like I'm a little tiny, tiny scared person wrapped up in this rage that's flowing through me physically. And that was what I described to the doctor when I went. And she was the one who really said, we need to talk about depression. In that conversation, same conversation as talking about mental health, her number one thing that she told me I needed 100% to do was to get nutrition in my body. And so she was the first person for me who said taking care of your mental health is the same as taking care of your physical health. The two are connected. And if you're not taking care of your body, your mind is not going to heal. And so her advice to me was to just get a shake, like a protein shake. She said, I don't care what kind you get. I can even refer you to somebody who sells them if you feel overwhelmed about going to the store and picking one. It takes 30 seconds to make one. You don't have to touch food. If you're having all these food aversions, it's literally just blend it, water, you're done. Or, you know, almond milk or whatever. And she said, I want you to have one like 3 times a day for meals until you start to pick up. So that's what I did. And it's still what I do sometimes when I'm having a rough day. That was wonderful advice from her.
Serena, could you tell us about how you came to paint what would be the first of your deck of cards?
It's probably the most popular of all of my paintings that I've done. It's a uterus. It's like a magnificent rainbow uterus. I painted it about a year ago. And I was having some physical pain, and I was going to go in and get an ultrasound for, you know, to check if I had fibroids or whatever and to see what was going on inside. And my appointment was in the afternoon, and I was at home and I was stressing out and I was thinking, why could this not have been at 8:30 in the morning? And now I have to wait all day long to go in and get this done. And so I had a few hours on my hands. So I sat down to paint and I painted this uterus, and full rainbows are very much a signature style for me. Try to fit as many colors into a painting as possible. And so I did this rainbow uterus and I scanned it into my computer and I wrote, "You are magnificent," across it. And I felt like it was a wonderful meditation that day, looking forward to, what if I find out that I'm going to lose my uterus today, which is fairly regular in my family for women around my age. I was having lots of emotions about that. And so I just had this moment of meditation of painting this uterus and putting my signature style on it. And then the finalization of writing, "You are magnificent, whether you stay with me, whether you go." And that had a huge reception on social media. Lots of people have related to that painting. And so now I have it on buttons and stickers, and everybody, as soon as they see it, they go, "Oh, is that a uterus?" And then they just love it. And either they laugh and they get a little embarrassed, or they're just completely taken up in it and they relate to it in some way. It's been a pretty powerful piece. And it is definitely what got me thinking about combining art and actual real advice for women together.
Could you tell us about the medium and why you selected it?
I had said before that I had started going to school right when I got pregnant, and I had purchased all of the supplies that I needed for that semester that I ended up dropping out of. And I had a closet full of massive drawing paper and painting papers and all the things that I wasn't using. And then I had these children who were growing, and then all of a sudden they needed their closet. And so I sold it all off to a friend who homeschools, and she purchased all the supplies, and she was so excited. And I decided the day will come that I will have time and space for this again. And today I just need to let this go, just let all this stuff go. And that dream that I was so excited, and I was in this place at school where I was like the star of the class and I got the scholarship award and all these things, and I just let all of that go and told myself that the day will come that I will dive in and do it again. So when the day did come that I felt like I even had a mental capacity to do any type of art at all, I did go to the store and I was looking around trying to decide what would fit in our little 2-bedroom apartment with the 4 of us and our 2 dogs and our fish. And I had tried so many different mediums in my first semester and a few weeks of school, but I hadn't tried watercolor. But the thing that caused me to pick up the watercolor was that it's so compact and it wouldn't take up any space in my little house, and I wouldn't have to fill up my kids' closet with all the supplies. And so I picked out the cheapest little $8 palette that they have, the type of palette that you would give to a kindergarten class. And I got paper and just the most basic brushes. I went home and I started playing with it and made what is now still one of my most popular prints that I sell with just that little cheapy little palette. And this is something that I always share in my workshops that I teach, because there's nothing complicated about watercolor. It's just pigment and water. And other mediums, you need all kinds of different things and supplies and who knows what. But watercolor is something that anybody can pick up and try. And that was what I experienced. And when I did, it was like this whole world opened up to me with this medium that I had never tried before.
I love that story because people sometimes make excuses for not doing their art. Oh, well, I'll do it when I have more space, or when I have more time, or when I can afford the supplies, or after I've taken a class. And your story illustrates that you don't really need the time or the space or the class if you think art could bring something to your life, which obviously it can. Just find a small way to fit it in, and then it will start clawing its space out of your life.
Yes, it's so, so true. And that's why I always tell that story when I open up my workshops and I'm doing my little introduction to watercolor, because I think there's so many people who want to create and they want that outlet or that emotional outlet that art gives, but they don't give themselves permission to.
Could you read some of your affirmations for us?
My personal joy is worthy of my to-do list. I get to parent exactly how I want to parent. Taking care of myself is part of taking care of my kids. I will find a wealth of patience in my soul when my body is fed. I created life, and that is freaking sexy. One day, this babe will be a parent worrying over my grandchild, asking me for advice. I will have great advice. Not loving every moment of parenting doesn't mean I don't love being a mother. A good cry clears my mind and resets my soul. I've got this. Their expectations do not need to be my expectations. I am strong when I ask for help. Today, I will open my heart and let my children teach me. I will be intentional in my actions for myself and for my children. When I take care of myself, I become the mother I desire to be. I will lead this day in humor and honor my children's wild universe. In the eyes, mind, and heart of my child, I am a good mom. Being a mother is only one part of who I am. I am strong, and I will demand a moment for myself today. Motherhood does not mean I must put aside my own dreams, desires, and hobbies. Hydrate, Mama Bear. It is okay to grieve the loss of my previous body. One day, I will be able to own it, love it, work it back to thriving health. This grief is but a season, and I will be okay. If all I do today is love and hug my kids, then I have done enough. I'm super excited to put everything together. My plan is to have them ready for printing by March so that they will be available in time for Mother's Day of 2020.
And you got a grant from the Arts Foundation to help with this project, correct?
I did. It's absolutely amazing. The best part of that whole thing is the video that I made caused me to really think through the project. I did a video application for the first time. Really putting my story into words and recording it down was pretty powerful for me and got me really excited to follow through on the project. I received funding, which was so exciting, and it felt very validating that this project is going to be something that is going to help women. and it's going to help families. And I'm hoping, my dream is that even if just one person picks it up and finds the affirmations to really be what they need, that's going to be amazing.
One last question, Serena. Could you share a bit of the business side of this journey for the sake of other artists who may be looking for ideas about how to bring their creations to different markets?
It's fun. It's the fun part. I know it can be the scary part for a lot of people, but for me, marketing is the fun part. I've always been kind of marketing savvy, and so it's enjoyable to me. My biggest advice would be, number one, don't be afraid of rejection. Number two, utilize Instagram, because Instagram is a super powerful marketing tool. I find the genuine connections that I have made through getting to know other artists and business owners in Tucson and around the world, really, creating those genuine connections with people has really led me forward in a big way. Like the Arts Foundation, I found out about the grant a couple of days before it was closing through Instagram. And I was like, hey, what's this? And so I made my video really quick and I submitted it like the day that it was due. And if I had not been on Instagram looking through local businesses, local organizations, getting to know people through social media, I would have completely missed out on that opportunity entirely.
Thank you for speaking with us today, Serena.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is